This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in 30 minutes' time, New Jersey Devils broadcast analyst on MSG Plus. He covers the New Jersey Devils. Ken Danico is going to join us. 7 p.m. tonight from the Philadelphia Daily News. Frank Saravelli is going to join us to talk about the Flyers. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good evening to my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And gentlemen, it's nice to know we have a captive audience tonight, as if you plan on driving down southbound Osborne anywhere near Jubilee, you're just going to be sitting in your car for at least a good 20, 30 minutes.
Surprised the two of you made it.
It was touch and go as I sprinted in here in about a minute and a half ago. It was, I mean, that's just crazy traffic.
I'm not going to say that Remus and I weren't talking about doing a little show by ourselves.
Yeah, that would have been riveting, riveting radio.
Remus? I thought it would have been pretty good.
It would have. Me and Darren ripped up the warm-up earlier.
Yeah, well, I mean, Darren carried you. We know that. I mean, wow. Richard would carry you just the same. So, I mean, it's all fine and good.
Talking trash.
Yeah, that was fighting words.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned. I'm not too concerned. Ezzy, good afternoon. Good evening. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. I don't know how Richie got here. He must have taken rapid transit because I also took Pemina from downtown. And I'm wondering, you know, what's going on here. And then finally, I get to kind of a break in the traffic, you know, when it starts to speed up.
Yeah.
And I see this guy, and he's kind of not really doing anything, drinking a Slurpee in front of 7-Eleven there on Pemina.
So you mean a construction worker.
A construction worker. I still don't know what's going on here.
So. I was also here for a pre-tape. So.
Yeah, we have pre-tape, a Saturday Spotlight interview that you'll hear in the coming week. So that's something you can look forward to. Barry Melrose joining us on Saturday Spotlight, of course. Probably not this week, but the week after. We got somebody else hopefully scheduled for this week that we'll tell you about all on Friday or Saturday. Anyways, gentlemen, why don't we start with the Winnipeg Jets' victory last night on Long Island, defeating the New York Islanders by a 4-3 margin. We'll go goal by goal as we do here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. But before that, sort of your overarching thoughts about that hard-fought victory for the Jets last night.
I mean, they won the game, and you know, certainly took it to the Islanders. I thought at times the five-minute penalty that Kuhlman took really did change the game. What I take away from the game at a different level, and maybe have a more macro look at it as opposed to a micro look at it, is you could have dropped this game into 2011 and I wouldn't have known the difference.
That's true.
The roster is generally the same. The inability to dictate the pace is generally the same, or in the style of play. I mean, for the most part, the team won and the fans should be happy about that, but I just look at this as not a ton has changed. I know Paul Maurice said going to the game that weird things happen on Long Island, whatever. At a macro level, I just think to myself, whoa, I swear I could drop this game in 2011 or 12 and I wouldn't know the difference. And that's disconcerting from that point of view.
Well,
I don't mean to be negative about it. That's just how I feel about what I watched yesterday.
You know, and to your point, one of the things I was looking for after the Jets were able to get that 3-1 lead, thanks to some greasy goals and some lousy goaltending from Yaroslav Halak.
Hey, that happens during the course of the year. Yeah.
Not taking anything away from them. I wanted to see how they handled a 2-goal lead on the road.
That's one of the points I'm making. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Could they shut it down? Could they choke off the New York Islanders? And we saw that it did not take very much time at all for the Jets to, you know, not change their ways and for the Isles to get back in the game.
Well, in a game like this, they obviously gave up the lead and they didn't hold on to the lead when they were up 3-1, but they got the win. And, you know, Richie talks about the macro level, and it wasn't a pretty game. I thought Tobias Enstrom was horrible. On one of the plays, he goes and he challenges Mikhail Grabowski.
The tying goal.
And he takes a hack at him, and I don't know what he was doing. If you're gonna you know, front a forward that's oncoming, you take the body, and Mikhail Grabowski just goes around him And, you know, I don't care if someone's supposed to pick up, you know, Mikhail Grabowski or whatever. I mean, that Enstrom challenges Grabowski, and he just beats him cleanly. And I thought Tobias Enstrom was also beat early in the game, and I thought he had a very weak game. And, you know, Paul Postma coming in and having to step up on the top pairing, you know, against the John Tavares, Kyle Okposo line, one of the best lines in hockey, I thought that they were awful. I thought they did a horrible job. And, you know, at the end of the day, they get the win. And, again, Andrew Ladd and Brian Little have put this team on their back.
Yeah, they have,
and
for sure.
And they've got two wins here, and that's all that matters. But defensively, I mean, that's not Andrei Pavlik's fault. Mikhail Grabowski's coming in on Andrei Pavlik. Mikhail Grabowski's a great hockey player. And, you know, he outweights Andrei Pavlik, and you know, Pavlik maybe, you know, bit too early. But to me, Enstrom made a horrible mistake at a time when you can't afford to make that mistake. So, you know, they got timely goals. They got gritty goals. Paul Postma, you know, he might have not impressed me defensively, but, you know, he kept at it on the power play there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's deserved his power play time. And, you know, he just whacks in a rebound off of his own missed shot. So, you know, they got the goals, and, you know, that's what it's all about on the road here. You know, it doesn't really matter how you get the points. I was expecting them to at most get two wins on this road trip. You're playing four good teams here. But, you know, I have to agree with Richie. As far as how they won, it wasn't pretty. But you get the win here, and you know, that's what is a positive sign here. It's the first winning streak of the season. You know, Andrew and Brian Little are starting to play well, and that's what it's all about.
Let's go goal by goal. The Isles open the scoring at the 1:16 mark. Brock Nelson on the power play, assist to Johnny Boychuk and Kyle Okposo.
For Okposo on the far side of the hash. He puts it back toward the line, and Boychuk slap shot, hit the post, rebound, they score.
Just a bad start for the Winnipeg Jets, really, in that entire game. I mean, taking, you know, two penalties within the first 3 minutes and 4 seconds. Blake Wheeler was in the penalty box in that one, and then Mark Scheifele took one not too long afterwards that, fortunately for the Jets, did not actually cost them anything.
Yeah, bad break here. No pun intended. Brian Little blocking the Johnny Boychuk shot and breaking his stick. I mean, Andrew Ladd probably wants to protect the middle with his stick in terms of the lanes there on the pass across to Boychuk, and Trouba probably wants to have better positioning on Nelson. Those are the two things you probably want to defend, you know, be a little better at. But at the same time, there's also the luck of the draw there, and it's a broken stick, and it happens to change directions and then goes to the off the post, and the puck pops where nobody expected it to pop.
Right. And the Jets, that was the only goal in the first period. The Jets were trailing 1-0 after 20 minutes, yeah, and probably were fortunate to be only trailing by that one goal at that point.
Yeah, Andrei Pavlik had a very good period. And as you mentioned, the Jets were penalized shortly thereafter, giving up the power play goal. But again, you know, they didn't play very well defensively. Andrei Pavlik bailed them out. And the turning point in the game was Nikolai Kuhlman's hit on Mark Stewart. And give Mark Stewart credit for coming back in the game, yep, and playing very well. But, you know, that first period, it could have easily been 2 or 3 nothing in New York.
Well, let's get to the power play goals. The Jets were able to tie it up on that 5-minute major that you mentioned. Andrew Ladd gets his third of the year, assist to Brian Little and Toby Enstrom.
Well played back in behind his own net. And outletted far side for Little. Near side for Ladd. Steps in over the line, feeds it in toward the corner for Little. Little back in toward the slot, a quick shot. Stop, rebound, they're banging away at it. It's in, they score!
Just, you know, really, it looked like the scoring chance was almost done at that point in time when the puck somehow sort of ends up under Yaroslav Halak and in the back of the net.
Yeah, I mean, that and this next goal are both goals that you can break down as much as you want, really. It's obviously a better, you know, getting into the zone. They do a nice job there with Little and Buffon off the top there out of his own zone. You hear Paul talking about the breakout, but that's a slap your stick at the puck.
Yeah.
The puck pops in because Halak's all over the place and the puck goes in. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, what that goal is. It's just getting into the dirty areas and taking your chances. There's nothing pretty about it, and it doesn't have to be.
Let's play the Paul Postma goal. That came at 4:06 of the second period, also still on the 5-minute power play, mm-hmm, and talk about his zone entry there and sort of his game in general.
Down to 90 seconds to go in the major penalty where the Jets have tied it. Looking for the lead here. Perreault at the hash marks. Down low for Ladd. Out in front for Postma backdoor. And he couldn't get a stick on it. It was stopped by Strait. He gets it off the back wall and jams it in. And he scores!
What did you think of Paul Postma's game?
I don't think there's a zone entry in that second one, Drew.
Sorry,
I think
you're right.
It was off a faceoff. And I liked the kind of Perreault on the half boards, which is a nice addition. And they tried some set plays there on the back door play, and Postma stuffs in. Again, it's Halak's got to have that, obviously. Postma played a really confident game. I agree with Ezzy's assessment. You know, I thought when he picked up speed, he's not going to be the best guy off the first step. When he picked up speed, he was skating with the puck well. He was confident, making moves, taking time to make plays. I think playing with Enstrom certainly gives him a confidence. Defensively, I mean, it's a little bit of an issue. He's not very good defensively. And so, you know, at the end of the game there, getting walked around, you know, those are, or as he walked around in the party, they were both walked around at different times in the game. And those are concerning parts for me. The Jets overall, like without Bogosian, I think, again, a bigger picture without Bogosian back there long term, you have to wonder if Bogosian's probably not out long term. We never know with the injuries in the NHL. But if he were to be out long term, I would throw Byfuglien back there before I'd be logging these guys big minutes.
Right, and you got to give Paul Postma a lot of credit on that goal. He sees Andrew Ladd has the puck and has control of the puck, and he makes the right decision to pinch, and he battles to the net, misses the shot, and then he's up against Brian Strait, who's not the biggest defenseman, and he outworks him and gets the rebound and gets the goal. So you got to give him credit. It turned out to be a very important goal. As far as his defensive play, we've already talked about it. It wasn't very good, and as a top pair going up against good lines in the NHL, it leaves cause for concern. Mm-hmm. So Postma, that's an area of his game that needs to improve.
Any supplemental discipline you think should come to Nikolaj Kuhlman for his hit on Mark Stewart, or is five in a game sufficient in your mind?
That's a really tough one, Drew. I mean, like Stewart... I think there probably should be supplemental discipline, frankly, because even though Stewart's going for the shot and you could argue, oh, he kind of came in from the side, you know a guy's vulnerable when he's taking a shot. You're not supposed to be doing that. I would suspend that. I would think at most he'll get a game, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if he got none. The NHL is just so wildly inconsistent with their rulings, it's really hard to predict.
Right, and you see a guy like John Moore, who does have a suspension history, get suspended for 5 games. That's what I was expecting him to get. But, you know, Mark Stewart, he's on the follow-through of a shot on that hit. And Nikolaj Kuhlman sees his numbers, but it's one of those situations where, was it a shoulder-to-shoulder? Was it... obviously, it wasn't. It was boarding. Does that require supplemental discipline? I think at most you would see them get a game, but it looks like he's not going to be disciplined. And it's one of those cases where the Jets going into the game had one power play goal, and they took advantage of it. They got 2 power play goals on that 5-minute major, and to me that was the turning point in the game. Even though the Islanders came back and tied it, to me that was the turning point in the game.
Taking advantage of an opponent's weakness, the Islanders were atrocious on the penalty kill coming into that game,
mm-hmm.
and the Jets did take advantage. I mean, you know, I don't have their history on taking advantage on 5-minute majors off the top of my head, but I think it's the first time that I can recall the Jets actually scoring 2 goals on a 5-minute major opportunity.
I mean, I'm not sure, Drew. It happens rarely, so I can't particularly recall. I can tell you that the Islanders, obviously Hamonic is a big injury, like not having him there,
sure.
Or a big, you know, omission from the lineup. But if Islanders are going to be icing that defense in a big game against any team, they don't have a chance.
Yeah,
that defense is not good enough, and it's particularly not big enough. And you talk about their penalty kill, their lack of success on the penalty kill. I think that can be very well attributed to the lack of size and ability to clear the front of the net, block shots, and different things that you need to do in order to be successful on the penalty kill.
Yeah, and again, it's not a pretty win, but going into the game without Bogosian, without Kane, mm-hmm. against a team that's 6-2, you still got to give this team credit.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a road win is a road win. You're not gonna take that away from them. Jacob Trouba made it 3-1 at the 11:42 mark of the second period. His first of the year assist to Mark Stewart and Brian Little.
Visit them and score a great deal on a 2015 Honda today.
Fight for the puck and the neutral ice. Jets win it. Here's Trouba across the line. Shoot! Score! Jacob Trouba with a bullet off the glove of Halak, and the Jets have scored 3 unanswered in this second and lead it 3-1. Oh, yeah!
Was that the worst of the 4 goals that Yaroslav Halak gave up last night?
By the way, can we...
Yes, it was the worst goal that he gave up.
I love the assist. When you rewatch a goal in the game, I mean, I guess little tips it, but the way that you give assists in the National Hockey League is hilarious. That was a brutal goal. The one thing you can give credit to is Trouba. Is Trouba's able, because he's so fast, able to back up Boychuk and then have Boychuk turn his back to Trouba, which you're not supposed to be doing. So that's a credit to Trouba. But, I mean, I don't know which of these 3 goals is worse.
I mean,
all 3 of them are terrible.
They're all pretty terrible. To me, I chose this one because, I mean, you know, at least there's, you know, when they're in front of the net and there's a scrum for the puck and everything else, you know, maybe it gets poked in and everything else. This one was just a floater. I mean, you know, respect to our buddy Paul there. I didn't think that was much of a bullet from Jacob Trouba on that shot. I thought it was just a real big misplay.
It was a hard wrist shot, but I mean, a hard wrist shot in the NHL, even if it wasn't that hard, Drew, you might be right, from that far away.
It's 30 feet away.
Yeah.
It's a 30, 40 feet away. It's at least 30 feet away. So the first three goals weren't good. And, you know, Jacob Trouba, even though he gets the shot on net, and he's going kind of the opposite side. And so it was a well-placed shot, but it wasn't a 90-mile-per-hour wrist shot.
Didn't you guys both think it was tipped originally?
No, I just thought he misplayed it originally.
I thought he was tipped originally because I thought the goalies don't allow those goals in the National Hockey League.
Let's talk about the Isles' goals that tied it up. John Tavares gets his fourth of the year on the power play as well from Nelson and Boychuk. And then Grabowski goal, which, as you already mentioned, you know, he gets his third of the year from Vyshnovsky. To me, you know, the power play goal was, you know, it was a power play goal. Fine. The Grabowski goal, like you said, Izzy, I thought was absolute some of the worst defense you're going
to
see.
Well, I don't mean to pick on Tobias Enstrom, but I mean, this is his Achilles heel, guys. I mean, the guy is now leading the Jets in scoring. That's great. He's got 7 assists in 9 games here. But I mean, he goes up to challenge Grabowski, and he just kind of takes a hack at him, and he goes around him. It just wasn't a good play. And again, I'm not saying Tobias Enstrom's a horrible defense, but I'm just saying in this particular game, I didn't think he was strong. And, you know, John Tavares' goal, I mean, it's a power play goal, and Andrew Ladd kind of doesn't pick him up. He gets his own rebound. I mean, whatever. I mean, it was a big rebound by Pavlik. Again, I bet Pavlik probably would have wanted to have that rebound back again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought Shane Natty, of course, of the station and of TSN, I thought he broke it down pretty well. Yeah, Pavlik obviously doesn't want to give up that rebound, Ezzy. It's not a great shot from the side, but it's Ladd's guy in Tavares. Yep. He doesn't collapse low enough.
Yep.
I know you guys have opined obviously on that third goal. I'll quickly get in there. Grabowski makes the play and goes around Enstrom. Obviously, Enstrom misplays that completely. Paul Postma takes Tavares because Tavares is such a good player. Postma's got a read in that situation that Grabowski basically has a breakaway if he completely takes Tavares that way. And, you know, you hear Paul Maurice talk about communication. Well, Wheeler and Postma were not communicating because they both jumped the guy who could possibly receive the pass. And the guy with the puck walked in there like he was playing NHL 94, did 3 moves and scored. So, you know, I agree with Ezzy. If you're a Jets fan, you're very concerned about that kind of a goal still happening. I mean, you rarely see breakdowns that bad. But and the second goal is going to happen a lot because John Tavares is also just that good, right?
Right, sure.
And here's the game-winning goal. Andrew Ladd, it gets his second of the night, his fourth of the year, assist to Brian Little and Michael Frolik.
Trying to feed it in toward the middle, broken up by the Jets, but they can't get it out. And now, finally, it's Little that finds the puck in some skates and carries it across the line. Shifted toward the net, stopped in front, rebound, they score! Andrew Ladd going to the net, and it was just a shot toward the goal by Brian Little, and a big fat rebound off the right pad by Halak, right to the captain, yawning cage, and the Jets lead it 4-3.
Smart shot by Ladd, pardon me, by Little, or too big of a rebound by Halak?
Both. An intentional shot, a shot for a rebound to Ladd. Okposo should have had Ladd. Ladd beats him to the spot. I don't think there's any question about it that Halak is a bad rebound. He's got to either eat that or kick into the corner.
Yeah, you're right, Richie. It really is a smart pass, smart shot, but he knows it's a rebound, so it's a pass.
Little's playing really well.
And a poor rebound by Yara Halak, who seemed to really be fighting the puck all night. He didn't really seem to be comfortable at any point in the game. But again, the Jets did a good job of driving the net and getting these greasy, dirty goals. And that's what you have to do against a team like the Islanders, who you know are going to get their own fair share of goals.
Sure.
The Islanders,
top scoring the
Islanders
team in the NHL.
Exactly. They can score goals. And it's not just the top line, because we saw Franz Nielsen get a hat trick the other night. He was the third star of the week in the NHL. So it's a good play. And again, we talked about this last weekend on our regular Saturday show. These are the guys that they needed to step up, especially with Evander Kane out of the lineup. So, you know, it's one of those timely goals, and they were able to hang on for the win. It's a big win for this team.
Funny how Halak looks a lot worse playing for the Islanders than he did for St. Louis for all that time. That's
almost,
really
almost like there's a difference in quality of the defense between the two teams. Let's go to break. We'll leave behind last night's Isles game, and we'll look forward to tomorrow's Devils game. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I don't know what you can judge in a game like this, you know, other than, you know, we have to learn how to come into buildings like this and play teams like that. And, you know, I thought we were in a pretty good place for a while there. And, you know, as a group, just beat ourselves over the last 35, 40 minutes.
New Jersey Devils head coach Peter DeBoer, after last night's shellacking at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins, the
good
Devils.
Word, Drew.
Thank you. I wasn't talking about the nail polish there either.
It was a shellacking. If you watch that game, it was bad.
They lost 8-3 last night to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Did they give up 7 unanswered goals? Is that what I read?
Yep.
That's pretty bad in this day and age in the NHL. The Jets and the Devils tomorrow night, 6 p.m. from the Garden State here on TSN 1290.
Have you seen the movie The Garden State?
It's called Garden State. I don't think there's a "the," but I have.
It's a fantastic romance movie.
Remus for sure has a soundtrack to Garden State on some kind of iPod.
That's correct.
Yeah, 100%.
New Jersey Devils 4-3-2 in their first 9 games for 10 points. They are 10th in goals for with 28. They are dead last in goals against with 33. Obviously, that is skewed, I think, by last night's results. But they are also dead last in the penalty kill. 66.7% they are operating at. Led by Adam Henrique so far, 3 goals, 5 assists. Jaromír Jágr, 2 goals, 5 assists. And Mike Camilleri, 5 goals, 2 assists. But he didn't play last night against Pittsburgh. And his status for tomorrow night's game against the Jets is unknown.
He's probably not going to play. He's
got a
he
jaw
took a
injury?
Bad hit. Yeah, the New Jersey Devils. It's the same old story with this team, and I still think this is a playoff team here. But this team is having all types of problems, Richie, on defense, and they've tried to break up Bryce Salvador and Marek Zidlicky. Bryce Salvador has really had a tough year, and he's really getting it in New Jersey. There, he's the captain, of course, from Brandon. But, you know, Marek Zidlicky, not the best defensive defenseman, you know, and it's been nice to see the development of a guy like Damon Severson, also from Brandon, grew up in Saskatchewan. But, you know, a lot of those goals were not Corey Schneider's fault. Corey Schneider didn't play well. There were a few goals, I'd say at least 2, the Pascal Dupuis goal that he should have stopped. The Sidney Crosby goal was actually on Clemenson, the last one there. But it's the same old story, Richie. And, you know, if this team wants to, well, first off, make the playoffs, but go anywhere in the playoffs, I know the Eastern Conference is not very strong. I think we'd all agree. They got to tighten up. And you have a guy like Adam Larson, who's only played 1 game this year. He's not getting into the lineup. He's a guy who's played parts of the last 3 years. But this team is not structured enough defensively. And they have a lot of offensive play. I mean, you got a guy like Tuomo Ruutu on the fourth line, and you know, he's been injured. And, you know, they have, I'd say, pretty balanced 4 lines. But if this team doesn't get better defensively, nothing's going to change. And you're going to have games where, you know, you can win 4-3 because you have the Jágrs and the Camilleris and the Zajacs. But, boy, last night was bad.
What's happened to Zajac? I mean, just not the same player he was before. The combined age of the Devils, I think, is 2,500.
Well, when your second pairing defense is on average 38.2 years of age, because Bryce Salvador is, you know, just over 38 years old, mm-hmm. almost 39, mm-hmm. and Marek Zidlicky is right up at 38. That's an old defense, and I think it says a lot about Adam Larson. That he can't even crack this defense.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, jokes aside, Drew, is from my previous
Peter
comments.
Peter DeBoer doesn't like Larson.
He doesn't like Larson, and Larson, you know, they've expected far far more from him in terms of decision making, and you know, his progression has obviously been stalled, and you have to wonder if he's going to be moved. And it's always risky to move young guys, especially young defensemen, because if they bloom later than anticipated, then you could really be costing yourself, yeah. especially when you're the Devils. And, you know, guys like John Merrill have been in the system for a while, and you have high hopes for Eric Jelena and Severson, as you said, as he's really come out of nowhere. But at the end of the day, you use a 4th overall pick on this guy, and, you know, he looked pretty solid in the World Juniors. I was never enamored with him, but he's, you know, a solid player. He certainly should be an NHL regular at this point, you'd hope, if you were the Devils. So, you know, Lou Lamoriello isn't one to just give up on a young player on a whim. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how he plays this. And you know, you talk about goals against too, obviously Schneider, and we'll talk about that later a bit too, in terms of you know, his struggles. Well, it's early, guys. And I think this team's a veteran team, and that's one thing when you look at the Devils, like a loss to Pittsburgh, and I didn't see the game, but a loss to Pittsburgh for a young team may really affect them, you know, going forward. And I think for a team with so many veteran guys, they put it behind them and they move on. And I think Pete DeBoer is a very good coach. His team plays generally pretty structured game. Now, of course, he gives some guys more, you know, he's more liberal with some guys than others. And, you know, most coaches are, not all, but most coaches are. But they're going to need to play a structured style, Ezzy, because we know that their defense overall is not very talented. Is not, you know, and it's, as Drew mentioned, it's aging as well. You know, Bryce Salvador, never the most offensively minded guy, is a big guy who's tough as nails and has been playing that style for many, many years. It wears on you. Marek Zielicki was your
he was never good defensively,
right? And exactly. Now he's older, and I mean, you know, you watch some of these guys who are getting up there a bit, and it's just Father Time. I mean, they're just going to slow down a bit, and they need to be smart about things, and you need to be body positioning and different things like that. So for Salvador, it's getting to places. Sometimes it's harder. And Zielicki, it's, you know, how do you angle in the corners? How do you control the boards? And if a team sees a weakness in speed and size, they can take advantage of that. And you watch teams do it. If you watch the Jets, you know, where they're putting the puck against Vishnovsky yesterday, it's a similar thing. He's a guy who's not going to, like, they're rolling Vishnovsky yesterday out there, and the Jets are able to take advantage of him, you know, at even strength. And that's the issue you're going to have. An older guy who's more offensively inclined, never been great defensively, and the speed element that he once brought, now that he can't skate now, but he's not as fast as he once was. So it makes him not as difficult to play against.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Ken Danico to continue our conversation previewing tomorrow's Devils-Jets game. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek with The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he's the Devils color analyst on MSG Plus, Ken Danico. Welcome back to the program.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well. How about yourself, Ken?
All good, all good. I'm just at a charity poker event for Children's Hospital, but had time to step away and say hello to you guys and get ready for tomorrow night's matchup with the Devils and the Jets.
Ken, what's your chip count at?
We're actually just, the event's just starting.
Okay.
So I'm good, but no, it's always a lot of fun. I love the competitiveness, but it's more about the charity.
and if you don't end up on the broadcast tomorrow, we'll know that you did really well.
There you go.
Ken, we got to start, before we look ahead to tomorrow night's game against the Jets, sort of look back last night, obviously a very disappointing result for the New Jersey Devils, losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins by that 8-3 margin. Do you think there's going to be a lingering effect from that game, or is the team going to be able to put it behind them and refocus their energies on the Jets without worrying about what happened on Tuesday night?
Well, I think you have to have a short memory, and they have a lot of veteran guys in that locker room that have been through the wars and, you know, won some championships, the Patrick Elias's of the world. So he's going to certainly lend his experience about you just move forward. Too early in the season to get caught up in one game, whether you lose 8-3 or 2-1, a loss is a loss. But it was just such a peculiar game. It was strange. I mean, they came out, score 9 seconds in the game, exactly what you need in Pittsburgh, a tough building to win in. The Devils have had a real tough time the last couple of years there. They're up 1-0, they're up 3-1, they look like they score a short end of goal, look like things are under control, and they unraveled, and it's something you don't see usually from a New Jersey Devils team for the past 5 years. They'll play tight games, they'll make it difficult to get through the neutral zone, they won't turn pucks over, and they did all those things. And took too many penalties, which they've been doing all year. Last year, number one in the National Hockey League in penalty killing. Right now, they're in the bottom of the league. So it's just been real tough sledding, and it hasn't been horrible all the time, but it just seems the puck ends up in the back of the net, so I think their confidence is a little bit down as far as the penalty kill goes. But I think they'll want to bounce back. They haven't won a home game yet. They've been playing very well on the road besides the game last night, and they know the Jets have been playing well as of late, winning three in a row. So I think it should make for a real entertaining game, but they were embarrassed last night, so I expect them to come up pretty hard.
Ken, I wanted to ask you about the D pairings. You know, there's a lot of talk in New Jersey about breaking up Bryce Salvador, who's had a tough start to the season, and Marek Zidlicky. You've got Andy Green there with Damon Severson, the rookie, who's got 7 points in 9 games. It's been a very nice surprise. And then you've got the other two rookies, second-year players, Eric Jelena and John Merrill there. Is there any, emphasis from head coach Pete DeBoer to maybe change up the D pairings here, or is it too early for him to make that decision?
Well, no, they're mixing lines as well, and there may be a possible change, even a lineup change on defense. I mean, they've got a lot of great young talent on the back end, but I think over the years where defense has been the backbone and experienced guys, and certainly in our championship years a decade ago, we had a defense that was second to none, and it was just like clockwork as far as pairings and your responsibilities, whether it's on the penalty kill or on the power play or whatever it may be. And right now they're going through a little growing pains, but they're certainly not going to break up Damon Severson and Andy Green. Severson has been nothing short of remarkable. This kid is beyond his years as far as maturity on the ice, great hockey sense, confidence. So even in the 8-3 loss last night, he still played pretty well. He's really has opened some eyes, and he is the real deal. It's only 8 games in. You hate to get too giddy about a young defenseman, but just the way he carries himself, handles himself, and his puck handling ability and moving the puck, and his mind for the game. I think there's a star in the making with Damon Severson, that's for sure. And him and Green have been very solid.
And Ken, injuries obviously play a factor here, but what's been your initial impression of the acquisitions of Camilleri and Havlat in the offseason?
Well, Camilleri fit in like a glove out of the start, has played terrific. Scored 5 goals in his first 5 games, and that hurt him. I know a lot of teams go through injuries. It's never an excuse. Look at the Columbus Blue Jackets with what's going on with them. It's just unfathomable with all the number of injuries they've had early on here. But there was no Camilleri last night, no Havlat, who's missed the last few games, as a matter of fact. And they say they're, from the Devils' PR that they're day-to-day, but I'm not so sure how long it'll be. But they need Mike Camilleri. He's really brought them depth. He's brought them that guy that can score with fewer opportunities when the puck's on a stick. He makes them that much more dangerous. Something that the Devils have depth, have some good players, but to have those high-end skill players, that's something they've been lacking the last few years, and Mike Camilleri brings that. So they're hoping he's back sooner than later, but he has really fit in nicely. And from my perspective, I know he's been around a long time, but just watching him day in, day out, I didn't know he was that complete of a hockey player. He's very responsible defensively. He's been a real good acquisition. The key is for him and Havlat is to stay healthy, and that's something the Devils are hoping is going to be in the future, that these guys can play a stretch of games without being hurt.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is New Jersey Devils color analyst Ken Danico, previewing tomorrow night's Jets-Devils game. Now, Ken, anybody who goes to a New Jersey Devils game knows that the crowd, when the Devils are on the penalty kill, has the habit of chanting, kill, kill, kill. Unfortunately, for the Devils, they haven't been able to kill off many of those penalties. Dead last in the NHL at 66.7% on the penalty kill. What's been the biggest Achilles heel so far that's affecting the Devils' penalty kill?
They're going to have to change that chant, obviously, right now, and maybe give them a different kind of luck. But, I mean, it's such a excuse me, guys. It's such a fine line of killing a penalty for 2 minutes and being scored on. They've been scored on a lot late in penalties, as far as the last 20 seconds, 30 seconds, where they do a great job the first minute 30, unable to clear the puck, and it stays in the end. We know that what usually happens is ends up in the back of your net if you have an opportunity to get it out, a clean opportunity, and you don't, you're going to be in trouble. And that's been some of the problem, but it's really hasn't, I mean, as bad as it's been as far as percentage in the bottom of the league, I watch closely, and for most of the penalty kill, they're doing a good job. It just seems a little bit out of sync. If one guy's 2 feet out of position and he doesn't read off the defenseman who's jumping in along the boards, and the forward's supposed to come down get a loose puck. They're just a little bit off, and other teams are taking advantage of that. And certainly a team like the Pittsburgh Penguins, if you don't force them, if you don't pressure them, and the Devils have always been a very high-pressure team on the PK. Like I said, last year, number one in the National Hockey League in the last 5 years near the top. So that's been their forte, and it just hasn't gone their way. And they're going to have to rectify, no doubt, because that's a big reason in their three losses, and obviously a couple in overtime and one in the shootout, is because the PK hasn't gotten the job done. And again, the goaltender has to make a save, and Corey had a tough night last night, and he makes no bones about it. He's a guy that's very hard on himself. I think he's one of the elite goaltenders, but it's taken him a little time as well to get his game going. He's played well at times, and then he's let some weak goals in. So all those things, you add them up together, and the penalty kill's where it's at is because of some of those factors. But they think they can rectify. The thing is, it's penalty kill something. It's hard work. It's sacrifice. It's blocking shots. It's reading off each other, and it just hasn't gone their way yet. But they feel it's something that they can rectify. But they have to do it sooner and later, no doubt about it. But the good news is they're scoring more goals than they ever have, and that's why they have more wins than they did last year in the first nine games.
Ken, before we had you on, we were talking about last night's Devils-Penguins game, and we were talking about Adam Larson, fourth overall pick in 2011. He's only gone into one game so far this year. I guess it's a two-part question. Why hasn't Pete DeBoer used Adam Larson enough, and what's his future really with the Devils?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, he's only 21 years old, and he's still got a tremendous upside. Some defensemen don't develop until they played 5-6 years in the league. He's frustrated, yes, and rightfully so. If you're a competitor, you want to be in. They want to see more consistency on a nightly basis. But the game he played pretty well, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's in tomorrow night after the performance of the Devils in Pittsburgh. I think he might get in for one of the young guys. It's just it remains to be seen. But it's just been a numbers game, and we all know with injuries, we've talked about that, it's going to happen sooner than later, and then he's going to get his stretch of 10 to 15 games in a row where if he plays consistent, he's got to believe that he won't be out of the lineup again. And by showing the coaches that once I get in on a regular basis, you're not going to be able to take me out. But I just think it's way too early. People panic, and, you know, I know he was a high draft pick, but he's only 21 years old, and he's got a lot of poise. He's a pretty smart hockey player out there. He just needs that opportunity, and right now it's numbers. And things aren't always fair, guys. We know that. You know, every team goes through it. And when I went through it as a player, not always fair. You think you should be in, but you're not. Some coaches look at it differently. But when you do get that chance, you got to be ready to show them they can't take you out. And I think Adam Larson will get his chance sooner or later. It might be tomorrow night against the Jets.
Final question here, Ken. I just want to ask you about Pete DeBoer. You know, he's one of the coaches out there, I think, doesn't really get enough attention, and he's really lasted New Jersey quite a while, considering Lou Lamoriello's, you know, never been shy about changing coaches if he thought it was necessary. In my mind, at least, it seems like the team plays pretty cohesively on the ice in terms of strategically, and it seems like sometimes, you know, the construction of the roster over the past few years has changed quite a bit in terms of, you know, the strengths of the team and the weaknesses of the team. He seems to have adjusted pretty well. Do you think that he's, well, I guess, first off, do you agree with that? And second off, if you do you think he's underappreciated in the media at least?
Well, we know it's an envious job of coaches in the National Hockey League. He's under scrutiny here right now, whether it be the fans or the media not making the playoffs the last 3 years. And, yes, maybe at times he hasn't had the horses, but he's a very well-prepared coach. He gets the most out of these guys. And for the most part, they seem to respect him and play hard for him. It's just a matter of, as we know, a lot of teams is the execution. And this year they've been a little sloppy defensively, again, what's been their forte. But Pete's a real good coach in my estimation. He knows the game so well. And he's mentioned it many times, guys, that he learned along the way. You know, he heard some disgruntled youngsters in Florida with Pete DeBoer, and he had a pretty good record with that hockey club as well, but they just missed the playoffs. And I think one year they had 91 points. But he said he's learned along the way how to handle situations, people a little differently, because nowadays we know these kids. In the old days, in my era, certainly in the 80s, everybody was treated equal. Nowadays, you got to give a hug, who you kick in the butt, to make them perform to their best of their ability. And Pete DeBoer's learning along the way. But I just think, as far as tactical, as far as preparation, he's one of the best. He's really good at understanding the game and getting his guys prepared each and every night. Like I said, last night didn't work out. We know that. It's a long year. But But yeah, to answer your question, does he get enough recognition? Maybe not, but he's under scrutiny here, so don't tell the fans that right now because they expect to win every game, like every city.
Oh, God.
Ken Danico covers the New Jersey Devils for MSG Plus. He's their color analyst on their broadcasts. Ken, we appreciate you giving your time. We'll let you get back to the charity poker tournament. Thanks for doing this.
All right, fellas. Pleasure. Should be a good game tomorrow night. Enjoy it, fellas.
Likewise, Ken. Thanks very much.
All right, pal.
Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils color analyst. In case you missed any of that interview, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course, on IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Coming up in about 10 minutes' time, Frank Saravelli from the Philadelphia Daily News is going to join us to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers.
That team's a disaster right now.
They got a lot of injury woes, especially
huge
on
the
back
end. Huge win
for
them last night, though.
Yeah, big win against the Los Angeles Kings on home ice last night.
Yeah, Braden Schenn got the winner there, and they weren't sure if it was a goal, even though I thought it was a goal. But a team that's kind of playing 500 hockey right now, but team that, as we're going to talk about, has a lot of injuries there on D.
Yeah, the NHL War Room is actually in your basement, isn't it?
What do you mean?
You're covering a lot of games, Desi. I'm impressed.
Well, I mean, I paid $200 for the NHL Center Ice package. I got to, get my money's worth.
Yeah, makes sense. Don't blame me for watching it. Would never criticize you for that.
One thing I've noticed, sorry to interrupt here. One thing I've noticed watching the game so far is there's a lot of bad teams out there. Like, there's a lot of really bad teams. And I'm wondering if, and I was talking to somebody about this week, the NHL is kind of resembling the NBA a little bit for me. Like, the cap comes in, teams have kind of adjusted. It's been 10 years now, about, since the cap came in. And, like, you have a lot of haves and have-nots. More than ever, I think. Like, Carolina and Buffalo were two of the worst teams ever. And I realize, since the lockout for sure, and I realize it's partially that's intended because Jack Eichel and Connor McDavid are available. And I don't, that strategy probably makes a lot of sense. But they're pretty bad. I mean, you have a bunch of other teams that really aren't very good or close to very good. And you have L.A., Chicago, the top, Pittsburgh's always up there. The top echelon teams who have been there for like 7 years now. San Jose, I know they're going to crumble like they always do. But the idea is that you have all these teams and it's that middle is not so much there anymore, guys. It's interesting to me. And you wonder with the cap going up, if it's going to continue that way. And I don't think it's related so much to money. Obviously, money can be a factor depending on teams spending more money than less. I think it's management. Or, I think it's successful management on one side and mismanagement on the other. I think there's a gap in managers here.
You think there's a top 10 in general managers or team management and a bottom 20, let's say?
I think it's changed a lot over the past couple of years, but those teams were in such a big hole that it takes a while to get out of. Like Calgary, for example. Like, really making nice headway here, but it takes a while to get out of that hole.
I think, Rich, I agree with you 150%.
150%?
200%.
Wow.
250%.
Wow, it's rapidly increasing.
And I think we've seen over the last 3 to 5 years how good drafting, consecutive drafting, and one or two trades completely changing the dynamic of a team. For example, Tyler Seguin on the Dallas Stars. That trade right now looks awful for Peter Chiarelli. Mm-hmm. And I think in 2004, Richie, the year before the second lockout, you saw Tampa win the cup, and then you saw Carolina win the cup, and then you saw Anaheim win the cup. You were seeing a different team win the cup, and you saw parity coming out of that second lockout. Then heading into the third lockout with Chicago winning, and then you saw Boston winning. Now you've seen Chicago win it twice. You've seen L.A. win it twice. Right. Would we be shocked if Chicago or L.A. won the Stanley Cup again for a third time in the last 5 or 6 years? Absolutely not. Those two teams are exactly the same as they were last year, essentially. Yeah, sure, the Hawks got Brad Richards, but L.A. Kings are essentially the same.
Yeah.
So we've seen that if you build a team and you manage it properly, and that's not just making trades or just drafting, it's a combination of the both, I'd have to agree. I mean, Buffalo, and you know, they're writing about it in Toronto today, 4-0 Leafs yesterday. They had 10 shots on net.
And the Leafs are terrible, too.
Well,
I mean,
the best
they're
part
awful,
about
too.
That game,
10 shots
I know.
Buffalo
that's
had.
That's embarrassing.
The best part about that game is that it was 0-0 until 2 minutes left in the second period, I think. I mean, the Sabres were in it.
10 shots on net. I mean, come on. That's a joke.
Yeah.
Alex Ovechkin has 12 shots on net some games alone. So, I mean, the Buffalo Sabres are real bad. The Carolina Hurricanes are really bad. And, yeah, sure, you know, I know everybody's already talking about tanking and all that. They're just not very good.
The reason I'm surprised about the Sabres more so is that I thought they'd play hard for Ted Nolan. Yeah. I thought they would be closer to what the Calgary Flames are in that they play hard on most nights and they're unsuccessful most nights. But that they would, you know, they give you an honest effort.
You've got problems in Buffalo that I think haven't changed since last year. I think the goaltending, I mean, the goaltending, I mean, Ryan Miller and then, you know, all that. And then, I mean, it's changed. It's probably the strength of the team. But the problem in Buffalo is you have players that, you know, they almost think they're going to be traded, you know, 4 months before their trade. We're talking like a Drew Stafford or something. They have guys that are just lame duck players.
Bob Harley's also a better coach than Ted Nolan.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And you have players that have been brought in, Brian Gionta and Josh Georges from the Montreal Canadiens. But, I mean, there's so much youth here on this team. And then just players that aren't top six hockey players playing in those roles. So it's tough to watch.
Is the Calgary Flames roster that much better than the Buffalo Sabres roster?
On defense, it is.
No, that's a great point. As he's absolutely right. It's on defense, it is. And Bob Hartley's a better coach than Ted Nolan. Like, unquestionably.
Bob Hartley's won a Stanley Cup. Ted Nolan hasn't. And let me clarify that. I mean, Bob Hartley had, you know, Ray Bourque and Joe Sakic and Peter Forsberg and all these guys. But and I like Ted Nolan a lot. I really like Ted
Nolan. Bob Hartley's a pretty good coach, guys.
This team, I mean, guys, we all picked Buffalo to be a bottom five team this year, so I don't think we should act surprised that the Buffalo Sabres, you know, are having a horrible go of it here.
Yeah, see, they have 11 goals in 10 games.
I know.
Like, that's embarrassing.
Embarrassing. See, the thing is, Drew, I think what your point is that you didn't think they'd be that great, but you thought they would compete a little bit harder. And if you watched that Toronto game yesterday, they look like in game 9 of the season that they've already mailed it in.
You can't tell me that, I mean, I know that, you know, some games you don't give 100% effort, but I mean the Toronto Maple Leafs are not what I would describe as a. This isn't the New Jersey Devils when they shut the defense when they shut the Maple Leafs down to 6 shots on goal in that playoff game. I mean, most teams in the NHL playing against the Leafs defense can by default get you 20 to 25 shots on goal.
There's a lot of other teams that are bad too, though, guys. Like, I mean, that's just these teams are like just awful. The Carolina Hurricanes and Buffalo Sabres, through 18 games, have combined for 26 goals. That is appalling.
Okay, I mean, I don't even know how that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. But these other teams aren't very good either. I mean, even the teams that are, you know, a point a game. Like Philadelphia is not very good. We're going to talk to Frank Saravalli. I mean, Florida's obviously not very good. Toronto's is not very good at all. You watch them enough, they're not good. The Jets aren't very good. I mean, Edmonton's on a streak here, but, I mean, their defense isn't good enough. Arizona, they're pretty bad. Like, these rosters aren't even close. Like, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, these rosters, when you go into the matchup, you used to say, oh, any team can win any night. Now I watch these games, and I'm like, I'm not so sure any team can win any night. Most of these games are over before they start.
There's a outhouse and a penthouse, and it's becoming more clearly defined.
It is, and you wonder with management changes whether that will change or not, but I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure, guys. Especially with all these long-term deals, it leaves less flexibility to make moves.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Frank Saravalli, Philadelphia Daily News, will join us. We'll talk about the Flyers and their start to the NHL season. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
King sidestepped the man. Here's Drew Doughty, top of the right circle. He goes down low. Richards looking in front, into the high slot. Muzzin gives it up. Look out, Braden Shanda break away the other way. Got a half a step on Muzzin. Walking in, took the shot. He scores. It's in behind Quick, and no goal. They've waved it off. I'm not sure why. Quick goes back into the net with the puck under him. I think it's in. The Flyers are celebrating, but it's waved off on the ice, and this decision will come from Toronto.
Upon further review, the puck crossed the line before any contact.
It's a goal, and the Flyers win it in overtime. Braden Shen gets it. His third of the season. Three goals in the last five games.
Last night, Philadelphia Flyers' Braden Shen scoring the game-winning goal to beat the Los Angeles Kings. Welcome back to NHL Midweek, hour number two on this Wednesday evening. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the show from the Philadelphia Daily News, our good friend Frank Saravelli. Frank, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Good to be back with my friends in Winnipeg.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing you here. I believe it's December coming up, if I'm not mistaken. You guys make your only visit to Winnipeg.
Right before Christmas.
Yes. Perfect time to come to Winnipeg. Beautiful that time of year.
We'll have a Christmas present for you, Frank.
Yeah, it'll be a warm parka is what the Christmas present will be.
A warm parka and a cold beer. Sounds great.
Yeah, that we can promise. That's for sure. Frank, obviously wanted to bring you on, talk about the start of the season for the Flyers. Sort of off to, a bit of a middling start. 4-3-2 so far through the first nine games. For 10 points, if you could just sort of describe the start to the Flyers season in a couple of sentences, how would you describe it?
Well, I think if you look at their record, 4-3-2, you would say that it's pretty middling. But to be honest, I think this team has actually exceeded my expectations in some way, I guess, partly because they were so low for me. And I think after you look at the injuries that this team has had, they found out Kimmo Kiemann would not be playing before the start of the season with his blood clot issue. And then, of course, Braden Coburn goes down in the season opener. And just a few games later after that, Andrew McDonald goes down. So you're missing your top three defensemen, your three highest paid defensemen as well. And suddenly, the defense for this team was absolutely their weakest point before the season even started. And then you take those three guys out of the mix, and all of a sudden it looks like an entirely different team. And yet since then, they've reeled off wins against some pretty decent teams. They've beaten Dallas, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and now Los Angeles. And they've certainly had their weak moments as well, getting shellacked in Chicago in a game that just wasn't even close at 4-0. And they've certainly had their moments where they've looked terrible, but the fact that they've had a hellacious schedule and they've withstood these injuries and are still one game over 500 at this point, to me, is almost mind-boggling.
Frank, you talk about some of the injuries to key defensemen, Kimmo Kiemann, and, of course, the wily veteran there. But then you talk about Braden Coburn, and you talk about Andrew McDonald, who they acquired from the New York Islanders. They've brought up Shane Gostisbehere. He's played a couple games. He's a rookie, played for Union College last year. But when you look at this defense, can they withstand these injuries? And I guess as a second part to that question, how close were the Flyers to getting Ryan Whitney?
Well, I think the Flyers really didn't want to use Shane Gostisbehere since the start of the season, since Ron Hextall actually took over in May. He was pretty adamant that he didn't want to use any of his young players at all, and Shane Gostisbehere is pretty much the Flyers' top prospect defensively. But you have those injuries, and then I think the Flyers looked at what they have on the Phantoms, which isn't much in the AHL. They have a couple decent pieces, a second-round pick by the name of Robert Haig. But other than that, there really isn't a whole lot down on the farm at this point. So Ron Hextall really had to swallow hard and decide to use Shane Gostisbehere. And he's actually been pretty sour about it over the last week. I had him on our TV show yesterday, Ron Hextall, and asked him again about Shane Gostisbehere, who I think has tremendous upside. His transition game is excellent. He's not great in his own zone yet. I think he's 165 pounds soaking wet. He would remind you a lot of Torrey Krug in Boston. He's got just that incredible offensive side of his game, and he can really get the puck up the ice, which is exactly what this team needs. And I think they really swallowed hard, like I said, to bring him up and use him. And I think at this point, they'd like to do anything they can in terms of getting a guy like Ryan Whitney, just a veteran that they could put Gostisbehere back on the farm, not have to worry about his development at this point, maybe rushing him a bit as they feel they are, even though I think he deserves to be here and is absolutely as talented as anyone the Flyers have on their defense at this point. But I think they'd like a guy like Whitney, who had a pretty decent debut in the KHL today. He picked up a goal and an assist for HC Sochi in his first game in the KHL. So I think the Flyers are watching that pretty steadily, and they're trying to figure out exactly where things stand after two games with Shane Gostisbehere in the lineup.
You know, Frank, if they bring in like Ryan Whitney, if he eventually does come over, can they afford to be that slow on the back end? Because they're not exactly fast right now on the back end.
Well, that's a great question, and a lot of people, a lot of fans, it's really funny, a lot of fans here are against Gostisbehere being in the lineup, but he has that speed, mm-hmm. and at the same time, they're against going after a guy like Ryan Whitney because he is slow, so there's really no sort of middle ground. It's almost like the Flyers are damned if they do, damned if they don't, and I think if you bring in Whitney, it's almost like saying to the current crop that you have, look, we're kind of throwing the season away. We're not really that interested in winning, because I look at Gostisbehere and I say, yeah, he's got some issues perhaps in his own end. I don't even think he's been that bad, but who exactly on the Flyers' defense at this point mm-hmm. is rock solid in their own end already? So to me, I think I would stick with Shane, realize that there are going to be growing pains, coach him, encourage him, instill confidence in him, that what he's doing is right, and just try and take the upside to his game, which is that offensive side, to and just go with it.
You know, Frank, you look at the Flyers from afar. Of course, you're in there. You cover the team every day. From afar, I feel like, you know, if Paul Holmgren was still in charge, there might have been some moves already, or if not maybe coaching moves, but player moves. And Ron Hextall's settling in as GM. Can you tell us about the differences between Hextall and Holmgren, and maybe how they would have each, how Hextall has approached this season thus far, and how Holmgren might have?
Well, Hextall, I'm not so sure that there would be a total difference, just in the sense that there really isn't a lot out there. I mean, Whitney is probably at the top of the list in terms of free agents at this point, and you look at some of the other names that we've seen floated through the rumor mill this year, and I think those guys include maybe Andre Sequeira in Carolina, mm-hmm. Jeff Petrie in Edmonton. I mean, there really aren't tremendous players out there that are readily available. Teams that have solid defensive players, especially ones that are affordable and on a one-year deal so that they're not clogging up room for guys like Gostisbehere next year, you know, teams are hanging on to guys like that. And yeah, I'm not so sure that anyone in charge of the Flyers at this point would have made any sort of big move to try and shore up their defense. I just think perhaps what they have right now is the best fit, and it's almost like let's roll the dice and see where this team falls. I think the Metropolitan Division, and especially the East in general, are so topsy-turvy that mm-hmm. the Flyers really could play like this for most of the season and be in the mix in the final week or two and certainly have a chance to get in. I think it really depends for this team on what happens with the Capitals, what happens with the Islanders. Look, everyone's talking about the Islanders like world beaters at this point, but let's not forget that they've been in this position a couple times before. I think even last year, the season before, they were, you know, towards the top of the Eastern Conference come December, early January, and they faded pretty quickly once John Tavares had his injury. And the Caps, you never really know what you're getting with Alexander Ovechkin. So I think 1-3 perhaps in the division, the Rangers, Pittsburgh, and Columbus are pretty sure bets for the playoffs. But after that, I think the Flyers are really sort of right in the mix.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Frank Saravelli of the Philadelphia Daily News, talking about the start to the Philly Flyers season. Frank, moving from the back end to the forward group, Jakub Voracek, 2 goals, 11 assists, 13 points in 9 games to start this year. Is this the season where he sort of takes that next step and becomes a household name among the best scorers in the NHL?
I think the Flyers are certainly hoping for that. They've been waiting for that for a little while. He's sort of had these teases in the last couple of years. I think he had a 60-point year last year. He was in the 50s at one point before that, and I think he had 50 in his second season with Columbus, too, and I think he's just looking to get over that hump. And I spoke to him for a bit this week, actually, and wrote a story about it, that he really took his off-season conditioning a lot more seriously this summer. He, for the first time ever, watched what he was putting in with his body in terms of nutrition, which is pretty startling to hear an athlete admit that at the age of 26. But he certainly has changed his ways, or so he says. He's about 10 pounds lighter, and I think so far you're seeing a little bit of that difference on the ice. Granted, he's playing with talented players like Claude Giroux, who obviously was a Hart Trophy finalist last year, but he's really been consistent so far. He has the most shots he's ever had to start a season, which is certainly a positive. And like you said, the points, he's right up there in terms of the top 10 or so in the league at this point. And I think the Flyers are obviously thrilled with that development.
Frank, you're in Tampa Bay where the Flyers are going to play the Lightning tomorrow night. Ray Emery is expected to get his fourth straight start from head coach Craig Berube. He's been in net for the last three games, and he's got all wins. I guess the question is, has Ray Emery been that good, or has Steve Mason been that bad?
I would say Ray Emery's been that good. I'm a little bit surprised even to say that, just based on the way that he finished last year. I think a lot of people thought that he was sort of definitely on the last, if not the back nine of his career, certainly the last few holes. And he's a guy that has been excellent this year. He's 4-0-1. The support in front of him has sort of been the same that Steve Mason has gotten. I mean, you look at his save percentage, .874 or something in that neighborhood. And the thing that I'm impressed with Steve Mason, though, this year is his mental makeup, I would say. He's a lot more mature, he seems. He knows where he fits in. Craig Berube believes he's the number one starter in this league. And Ray Emery is just a hot hand right now that the team's going to continue to go with while he is hot. And I think Steve understands that. He's not panicking. I think before in Columbus you might have seen a few surly quotes out of him, someone who was down on the situation. But I think he's a guy that's biding his time to wait to get back in the net. And I think you look at some of the games Steve has played, like I said, the Flyers were crushed in Chicago, 4-0. It was 3-0 in the first 12 minutes, I believe, and Chicago really took their foot off the pedal. As Ray Emery said, that game could have easily been 10-0. So Steve hasn't been all that bad. The positive is there haven't been too many weak goals from him that he's allowed. A lot of them have been backdoor plays where the Flyers' defense simply wasn't good in front of him either. But to his credit, Steve has said all along that it's his job to make stops that even might not seem possible at the start.
Hey, Frank, you know, the Scotty Hartnell trade obviously was a surprise to many around the National Hockey League. I mean, maybe to some, his long-term deal and the Flyers trying to change the makeup a bit might have not been that surprising, but lots of people expected him to, you know, saw him as a Flyer for the foreseeable future. How did that trade affect the room going into this new season now, and how has R.J. Umberger performed?
I think it's the jury's still out on how it affects the room, because while the Flyers did get off to a pretty poor start at 0-2-2 and there was some panic, I think, it's hard to say. I think I need to see a little bit more out of the mental makeup of this team. But I think so far I don't see a huge negative impact, and that probably surprises me in the sense that this move just didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me at all. I thought R.J. Umberger is a guy that also was on the downslope of his career. I know that a lot of people said the Flyers did it to free up cap space, but R.J. Umberger and Scott Hartnell make the same amount of money on the salary cap for each of the next three seasons. So I know that Umberger's contract expires after that, but if I'm the GM of the Flyers, I would probably want the better player on my team for each of the next 3 years. And I'm still not entirely making sense of the move. I think maybe it opened up a little bit of room for Braden Schenn on the forward lines. Maybe Umberger is a much better third line player than Scott Hartnell would be. But still, at the end of the day, this is a salary cap world, and I don't understand what sense it makes to have a guy pulling in $4.75 million on your salary cap that plays on your third line.
Frank, we're in Winnipeg, of course, and there's always going to be comparisons between Mark Scheifele and Sean Couturier. Couturier is logging about 20 minutes a game this year and has 5 points in 9 games, but is really known around the league more for his defensive ability. I know the Flyers are trying to get him to score a bit more, and he's done that in the past in junior. Can you talk about Couturier and how he's looked so far this year?
Well, every time that I'm down on Couturier, he does something to surprise me, and I think the Flyers were certainly looking for more offense this season. The jury's out again on how that plays out over an 82-game season, but he's off to a pretty decent start. And I think the most impressive thing, again, was he was able to revert back to that elite defensive style. We saw last week in Pittsburgh, last Wednesday night, the Flyers were in Pittsburgh and took on the Penguins, and he was on the ice almost all of his shifts, were either against Evgeny Malkin or Sidney Crosby. He held Malkin to one assist, Crosby to no points. It was only the 12th time in 49 games against the Flyers that Crosby didn't have a point.
Wow.
So, pretty incredible defensive effort. I'm just not sure if he can play at an offensive level that would make sense to justify sort of the value that he has around the league. And I know the Flyers are obviously, with Ron Hextall there, interested in keeping their younger players. But his value to me is sort of at an all-time high at this point. Me personally, I would consider moving him, especially if you can upgrade your blue line with a stud defenseman. I mean, one of the guys that was rumored in the Couturier talks last year or the year before was Keith Yandle in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's, to me, is the perfect guy that the Flyers need on their team. I know that he's a little bit older, quite a bit older than Sean, but I would certainly begin to explore some of the options to move him if you see that his offensive side isn't continuing to progress the way that you want it to and he's really just an elite defensive player, because I think you could find those players here and there that can play really good defense for a lot less money and can allow you to upgrade your defense.
Frank, we've got one last question for you here, and we appreciate you coming on. It's about Braden Schenn. We played the audio of Braden Schenn's overtime winning goal last night against the LA Kings. You know, Braden Schenn's a guy who's got 3 goals on the year. It took him until his fifth game to score his first goal, and I know that, you know, he's moved from center to left wing, and as you mentioned, you know, he's bounced around from the third line to the second line. He's been a guy that was rumored to possibly be in trade talks with Winnipeg, possibly coming with his brother to Winnipeg. But how big of a goal was that for him? Because he really hasn't realized his potential yet with the Flyers, has he?
Yeah, he really hasn't at all. I mean, you look back to that trade, and he was the guy that everyone talked about, not Wayne Simmonds, who's become one of the best power forwards in the league. And Schenn was widely regarded as the best player not playing in the NHL at the time. And, of course, he, like you said, he just hasn't lived up to that billing. And I think part of it is due to the fact that the Flyers have jockeyed him around a little bit. You look at some of the guys that were ahead of him, he's gone back and forth between left wing and center. Some of the guys that have been ahead of him on the depth chart the last few years have been Vinny LeCavalier, Danny Briere, Scott Hartnell. And then finally this year, coming into training camp, it looked like this was going to be his year to play with Claude Giroux, and it lasted 5 periods before Craig Berube decided to make a change. And it just, I don't know. I don't understand the continuous flip-flop with him. I think the Flyers believe he's not consistent enough, and also that he perhaps takes the easy way out in some games. But I think he's a guy definitely worth watching to see if he can finally flip that switch, because I think sometimes you see it and the talent is there. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
Frank Saravelli covers the Philadelphia Flyers for the Philadelphia Daily News. He's in Tampa Bay tonight, where the Flyers and the Lightning will play tomorrow. Frank, appreciate the time as always. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks a lot, guys. Looking forward to seeing you in December.
Yeah, we'll see you soon, buddy. Take care.
Take care.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, 6 things we learned this week.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Frank Saravelli, Philadelphia Daily News, for joining us to talk about the Flyers. In case you missed any of it, it is available for download on iTunes on TSN1290.ca. And, of course, on our website, illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, An essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Why are you giving me the finger there?
Because I was going to say right now, bottom of the first in Kansas City.
Not the actual finger, like the index finger.
I was giving you like the hang on a second finger.
The index finger.
The index finger, the pointer finger. Bottom of the first in Kansas City, Game 7 of the World Series underway. A game you can hear immediately following us, joined in progress on TSN 1290. So if you're in the car, if you don't like the broadcasters on television, turn your radio to TSN 1290. We have coverage of Game 7 of the World Series, the Giants versus the Royals. No word from Hustler as of yet.
Well, he was on earlier on the station, Drew, so that was, you know, getting ready to go for this big game. His seats are amazing, too. Who's doing the radio broadcast? Do you know who does the play-by-play?
I don't know who does the play-by-play.
Think about if it's ESPN Radio, it might be Dan Shulman.
Yeah, Shulman's great.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He did ESPN Radio, I think, the Sunday nighter before he got moved to the TV. And they got rid of Johnny Miller.
He's been on TSN for a long time.
Of course, he grew up. You know, he was one of those core guys in Toronto. Came up, him and Buck were the tandem when we were growing up.
Sure.
Yeah, you're not talking about Buck Pierce.
Well, I'm talking about Buck Martinez. When Drew grew up, it was Jack Buck who was coming up. Very few.
I remember Vince Scully's rookie season as a broadcaster. Is that what you want? Exactly. Is that what you want to hear right now?
Most people don't know who Jack Buck is.
Jack Buck is the father of Joe Buck, the
Drew, what was
legendary
the depression like?
St. Louis Cardinals broadcaster. What did you say?
I said, what was the depression like?
It's tough depressing. Economic times for Drew.
It's depressing, Izzy. It was depressing.
All I was going to say, and then until before you gave me the hold on as second,
yes,
I was going to say, you know, tied in with, you know, the Les Rikus commercial, Les Rikus sponsor, Reed, of course, a good sponsor of ours, is I was going to tell a little story. Maybe we'll have to, you know, push six things till the next segment here. But our good friend Har Jacob plays on the same team as Michael Remus.
Same hockey team.
He took a puck in the visor recently. And if he wasn't wearing his mouth guard, too, because it was, you know, so, I mean, you know, he came back and showed me his visor. It's a good thing he was wearing that visor, because let me tell you, that puck, there was a puck mark on the visor even. So, kids out there, make sure you wear your mouth guards, visors, and all that protective equipment. Drew, continue.
Thank you very much. We played hockey, of course, last Thursday. Did you enjoy that game, Izzy?
Oh, that was great. Well, the great thing is, Drew, we were on the same team, so I didn't have to hit you.
Yeah. But I still managed it. Remus was on our team. We still managed to hit Remus.
No, Drew played a very nice possession game. I think Drew had the highest Corsi on our team.
It's pretty much because I don't think I touched the puck. So I think I'm not sure what that makes my Corsi.
Well, what about Dave Manouk of LegalCurve.com? Had to leave the game with a foot injury.
Yeah. It's true. He took a slap shot off the foot. Or
it must have been so impactful. Remus just asked if he actually left the game.
Remus was on his team. Didn't notice.
Yeah, he was
that
on
Dave
your team.
Leaving.
Dave has the rare jersey that has the front number on it. I always got a good laugh when I saw him skating towards me.
Yeah, isn't that a jersey foul? To have the number on the front?
I don't care. I just thought it was funny.
Remus, what about this tie thing you and Shane Nattie have been up to?
Well, Richard.
I'm going to have to ask about what you guys are talking about.
Well, I don't know if you heard of this Twitter account, Drew. My favorite account, NHL Ties, where they rate.
Sorry, I'm not on Twitter anymore. I'm only ever on mremus.ca. That's it. Just always mremus.ca.
I'll take all the self-promotion I can get.
That's right.
But the NHL Ties, it rates NHL broadcasters' ties, so I sent them in a picture of Nighty and Bayak, and they declared Bayak the winner. He had the better tie knot yesterday.
I'm just checking that out right now. Well, you retweeted it.
I retweeted it. We told Shane, and Shane's like, well, Remus clearly has nothing better to do. Which
we could have told Shane that many, many years ago, that Remus had nothing better to do.
But he's going to step up his tie knot game.
Was it just about the tie knots, or is it about the ties and the patterns and everything else?
It has nothing to do with matching colors, unless it's like really bad, like something Ezzy would show up in the press box.
I know how to tie a Windsor. I just retweeted it, by the way. It's pretty funny. They actually like telestrate.
Oh, there's a telestrator.
They telestrate the two ties.
It's great.
It's pretty funny.
Nighty said he's stepping up his tie game for Thursday.
Remus is like owning Twitter right now.
It's going to be a tie just with Remus's face on it, is what it's going to be for Thursday. That's Shane stepping up his tie game. Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll do six things at that point in time. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This segment,
we need to get rid
of the
American band Remus. Like this, that's a.
I didn't pick this. This is a part of the thing.
How can we get something? We get something new on that one.
Look, we're talking in the break. I didn't have time.
Sorry, yeah. And Drew, I apologize for interrupting, but I mean, this song, it's been played enough. It's had its day.
I've never heard this song before.
This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For nearly 30 years, almost, it's going to be 30 years in November, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. The renovations are 99% complete. November 1st, Saturday, scheduled to reopen. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Coming up next week, the Broken Lizard guys, and then, of course, the 30th anniversary celebrations, November 14th and 15th. Derek Edwards, Mike Wilmot, Daryl Lennox, Dave Hempstead, four great comedians sharing one stage. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
He hustles down the right wing, under a minute to go in overtime. Now to Smith with a drive, and Grace came up with a pad save. That was a rocket drive by Brendan Smith. Now the puck loose in front. Abdelkader scores! The Red Wings win it.
Ezzy, Detroit Red Wings forward Justin Abdelkader is making most of the opportunity he's been given by head coach Mike Babcock.
Yeah, he's playing on the top line right now with Henrik Zetterberg and Gustav Nyquist. It's hard to believe, with Justin Abdelkader. He's 27 years old. This is now his sixth full-time season with the Detroit Red Wings. But he's a guy, to me, that he came up through the Grand Rapids Griffin system, AHL system, of course, and he's always kind of been on the third or fourth line. In the first few years, he was on the fourth line. But he was always a guy that was, a 10-minute a night player, played a little bit on the penalty kill. But, he's got 5 points here in 9 games, Justin Abdelkader. And for me, I thought last year was going to be more of a breakout year. He was getting some time on the second line. But for me, he's really taking, the most of his opportunity playing with Henrik Zetterberg and not to mention Gustav Nyquist. But he's a guy that he's kind of a crash and banger, a guy that's, got good speed, but he's not the biggest finisher. But I think, you're starting to see his offensive potential. He only had 28 points last year, but he's a guy that's played on the wings for a long time, and I think he's finally earned his right to be in the top six, well, top three at the moment. But watch out for him, because he's a guy that I think he's got untapped offensive potential.
Five.
Richard Pollock, playing in Chicago behind the likes of Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, has given Nick Leddy confidence to play in a more assertive fashion when given the opportunity on Long Island.
Yeah, at times where he did this in Chicago, but I know the style of play, obviously, that Chicago employs. I mean, there's some open style is similar in Long Island in some ways. I mean, Chicago plays it far better and more structured. But you watch Nick Leddy play, and you can see a confidence that that comes from moving from being the kind of the fifth, sixth guy in Chicago to being a basically playing with Boychuk, kind of being a top pairing guy on Long Island. And you see with the puck carrying through the neutral zone, which has always been a strength of his, but he's really making plays, I think, and he's making, sometimes decision making isn't the best, but you can see playing behind Keith for so long, he's learned a lot from Duncan Keith. And while he's not Duncan Keith, you can see a confidence that comes from playing and practicing with those guys night in, night out, and keeping up with them speed-wise and decision-making-wise for the most part.
Four.
Ezra Ginsberg, if the Dallas Stars and general manager Jim Neal are serious about making a run in the playoffs, then they will eventually need to make a trade for an established veteran, physical, defensive defenseman.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this guy since really last year. And maybe even 2 years ago, because last year, of course, the Dallas Stars broke out and finally got back into the playoff picture. But you look at this team, and I like a guy like Brendan Dillon and Jordy Benn, Jamie Benn's brother. They've been given an opportunity there in Dallas. But you watch the game last night; they lost 4-3 to the St. Louis Blues. Vladimir Tarasenko really tore them apart. You've got a couple of injuries there for the Dallas Stars. Patrick Nemeth is out of the lineup, and a guy like Sergei Gonchar, Richie. We've talked about this now probably for 3 or 4 years. Sergei Gonchar is just not quick enough. You got to play him only in sheltered minutes on that bottom pair. But for me, the Dallas Stars are really an unstoppable offensive team. And I know you wanted to talk about it a little bit later in the show. If time permits, we can talk about
it. Might be Saturday now.
Might be Saturday, but you know, with that line of Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, and Jason Spezza, they're basically unstoppable. I mean, it's the best line in hockey. But for me, if you really want to go far in the playoffs, to me, they're lacking a guy that comes to mind is like a Robin Regier. If the Dallas Stars had a very good defensive defenseman, and I'm not suggesting they're going to acquire him, even though he is a UFA. I'm just saying that they need like that veteran defensive defenseman to really solidify that lineup. And I know a guy like Kevin Connaughton, you know, has done an admirable job, but this team just.
They need 2D, not
they,
one.
They need a guy to come in there, a veteran guy that's just really his game is defense, because right now their D isn't good enough. And if they don't improve, I think they're going to be one and done in the first round again this year.
3.
Now Yakupov comes the other way, left to right with Benoit Pouliot over the line, drop pass Arcabello, now to Fane, left circle shot, save Tokarski, rebound, score! Yakupov buries the rebound. It's 2-0 Edmonton. Yakupov, second of the year.
Richard, people have to give Nail Yakupov some time to develop, including the Oilers, before clamoring for a trade and calling him a bust.
You know, I mean, you hear different things about trades and the Oilers and having to move one of those guys, and they're not going to move Hall. And I think they're going to move Nugent Hopkins. They would be, I think, stupid to move Everly. And I think right now they'd be stupid to move Yakupov, too. I mean, you've made these decisions now. You know, you drafted Yakupov over Ryan Murray or the likes of different players that were available, Morgan Riley, whoever it was in that draft year. And now to trade him, I don't think you're going to get full value for him. And I think you watch him play. He's still very explosive. He's got a great shot. He's not shooting enough, and that's a problem. And if you're watching the Oilers a bit, he really isn't putting the puck on net enough. But he is working harder than I think people give him credit for, and the natural skill and speed you can't teach that he has. So why would you give up on that guy to maybe get a defenseman who's really not the equivalent of him in terms of talent wise to at this point not make the playoffs anyways? I just think you have to calm down and you have to ride that one out, and maybe in time you see that he's not that guy. Maybe you do, but I mean, he's, to me, he's going to be at least a 30 goal 60 point guy. So why are you trading that guy? I just don't see it. I just don't see why how that makes any sense.
2.
Ezzy, Brent Burns has struggled early this season as he adjusts to the move back to defense, but the offense that he provides more than makes up for it.
Well, he's got 11 points, 11 or 12 points, I forget which it is. Got another point there yesterday, got another goal. If you look at yesterday's game, the San Jose Sharks beat the Colorado Avalanche 3-2 in the shootout. But on Gabriel Landeskog's goal, Brent Burns was just completely out of position. The thing is, we expected that.
12 points. Four goals, 8 assists so far.
He's got 12 points, so I mean, he's among the defenseman leaders. We expected that to happen, guys. And the reason why Brent Burns was put back on defense by Todd McClellan, in part, was because Dan Boyle is now a New York Ranger, left via free agency. But I think you're still seeing, at least when I've watched the San Jose Sharks, you're still seeing that tendency of Brent Burns to be a forward and to make those reads and those decisions to pinch in. So I think even though Brent Burns is taking a while to adapt, and I think the San Jose Sharks still have some question marks on defense, I don't think that defense is as good as it was 2 or 3 years ago, Richie. I think Brent Burns is such a dynamic offensive player, and he keeps getting points for this team that it makes up for it. So I think you got to watch out for Brent Burns, and he's got to tighten up defensively, but he's so good offensively that you kind of got to let it go a little bit.
I think the defense is kind of similar. I don't know if it is good enough to do it. Has it ever been good enough there to take them to the next? I mean, they have other issues with Thornton and those guys, but and the goaltending has been an issue as well. You know, going back and forth last year that McClellan had. But has the defense ever been like that good?
It definitely, in especially last year, if you compare it to like an LA or Chicago or even a St. Louis, it's not in the same ballpark.
Over the 10 years, they've choked away a bunch of chances. I mean, has it ever been that good?
Yeah, no, it hasn't. And ultimately, Richie, we know what wins championships. It's goaltending and defense. And obviously, you got to score more goals than the other team. Yeah. But no, they've always had that kind of issue where it's not as strong either on the second pair or the third pair. And to me, that's an issue for them. Like again, for me, the San Jose Sharks, they're easily a playoff team. But if they want to get out of that, if they want to get past the Anaheims and the the Chicagos and the LAs, I don't know if that defense is good enough.
1.
Johnson right circle, cross ice Philpula at the left point, 28 to go in the power play.
Here's Strawman, center point, left point Philpott. Tees it up, cross ice, Johnson, score! What a setup! Tyler Johnson! A power play goal, and he's tied the score at one. What?
Tyler Johnson, Richard Pollock, is the product of patient management, but also the product of a player that plays in a non-hockey market and is allowed to develop in the quote-unquote proper fashion.
He can exist in relative anonymity. He can play four full seasons in the WHL. He can play two full seasons in the AHL and then come to the NHL. He's in his second year and he's 24. He's been dynamite this year. Mm-hmm. He's really quick, smart player. He's a good passer. Makes really good reads. Makes a lot of the smaller player that he is. But he's allowed to develop and become that player because there isn't this clamoring like this Nylander clamoring like there was in Toronto, or Draisaitl, the mismanagement in Edmonton, all that stuff. He can just go down, play his years in the AHL, I mean in WHL, max out his CHL eligibility, come to the AHL, excuse me, learn how to be a pro, succeed there, bring him up. Now they get a reasonable contract for him too. But the idea is, it's a guy like Yzerman makes a smart decision there, and of course, you know, he hasn't been in the GM spot the whole time that Johnson's been developing. But it's a lot easier to do that when you're in Tampa Bay and then when you're in Toronto, when you're in Vancouver, when you're in Winnipeg, for wherever, you know, all these things. I mean, Scheifele and Trouba and different guys. I'm not saying, well, this is the issue. I mean, those guys should Trouba should have been brought up, obviously. I thought Scheifele should have some time in the AHL, but he performed pretty well last year, so I certainly could be said I was wrong there. And Lowry had his year in the AHL. But I think more for other teams who've rushed their players. That's the way to do it. And you can maximize value later on, too, if you're talking about it from a value perspective. I just think that's good teams. And LA did it, too, with their guys. You know, Pearson spent some time in the A, Toffoli. These guys, they come up through the system, and they're able to develop. And there's even with the internet and all the information, the AHL, nobody really follows it that closely in terms of, you know, if you're an NHL town. Just take a peek once in a while. You look at the stat sheet, you're not watching the games, they're not available, so you really can't analyze how the player is playing. You can grow. You can struggle, nobody's really gonna ask you questions about it, aside from the one writer. So I just think he's the prime example of why you need to be patient with a lot of these players.
Yeah, Richie, you make some really good points about Tyler Johnson. Undrafted, mm-hmm. excellent skater, excellent playmaker, has tons of offensive ability. And last year when Stamkos went down, it was Johnson and Palat, the rookies, mm-hmm. that picked up the slack for Stamkos' offense to replace that offense. So really good points by you.
Things are heating up in Kansas City. The San Francisco Giants scored two runs off Jeremy Guthrie in the top of the second. The Royals have answered back with a run of their own, and now they have first and second with nobody out. Stay tuned. As soon as we're done at 8 p.m., we'll take you live to Kansas City. Game 7 of the World Series radio coverage right here on TSN 1290. Let's go to break and come back with one final segment on this Wednesday evening.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment. Wednesday evening NHL midweek here on TSN 1290. A reminder, Saturday, The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Note the special start time, 10 a.m. 10 a.m. till 1 p.m., leading right into Blue Bomber game day here on TSN 1290. So you can be sure to, you know, set your clocks properly. Make sure you set your alarm 10 a.m. for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Saturday afternoon. Richie, you want to qualify something?
I want to close this, pardon the interruption when you have...
Who's Statboy?
Although I guess I corrected myself, so I guess I'll just be Statboy for my own point.
I think you should call Remus Statboy.
Yeah, Remus used to have the R-Desk back in the Red River days. Tyler Johnson was signed in his last year in Spokane by Yzerman, so Yzerman actually was there to oversee the entire development. I knew he was an undrafted free agent, but I thought that he came in before Yzerman. Yzerman actually preceded him, so Yzerman did sign him and did oversee his development into the AHL, and what a great move that was. Just qualify that. I don't like making mistakes.
Well, and what do you think the punishment should be for Richard's error? Lashes? Is it lash-worthy?
The fact that Richie has to do two radio shows a week with us is punishment enough.
That's a fair point. He does have to spend quality time with us.
quality is of course, a subjective statement.
Yeah. It's nice of you not to, you know, I thought it was really responsible of you to cap your birthday celebrations at three events.
Oh, here we go.
I thought 3 days of Richard Pollock birthday celebrations
Sunday
was
night, Sunday after, you know, there was that game. Who
yeah,
did
the
they
Jets
play?
Game against the Avalanche.
After that game, I told Richie, I was like, Richie, we've been partying for 4 days for your birthday, but Big Daddy's got to take a bit of a rest.
Did you refer to yourself as Big Daddy in the third person?
Yeah, you haven't heard. That's funny. That's his greatest routines.
I know. It's funny. I mean, I appreciate him calling himself Big Daddy because it's, I mean, everything about it is comical.
Well, I wanted my, you know, my nickname to be something else, but, you know, so you have to give yourself a nickname.
Better than Mindy, which is apparently, I've been dubbed by Libel.
I'm not a big fan of Mindy as a nickname. Like, I find that, like, for a nickname to really work, the person has to like it. Like, my nickname's Ezzy, really, and it stuck because, you know, it makes sense. But, like, to kind of impart a nickname on someone and they don't want it, I don't think works.
In Kansas City, they're now tied up 2 runs apiece in the bottom of the second. Runner on first still for the Royals. We'll take you to that game coming up at the top of the hour, so you'll hear the majority of Game 7 of the World Series. Always a great game, but although, I mean, I got to tell you, something about Jeremy Guthrie starting Game 7 of the World Series just doesn't work for me.
No, yeah. Drew, it doesn't even matter. This is the team of destiny. I mean, the Royals are going to... Does anybody actually believe that the Giants are going to win this? The Royals are winning this. Come on.
I think so, too. But Tim Hudson, Drew, isn't exactly Tim Hudson of the Oakland A's days.
I know, but at least Tim Hudson... I mean, was Jeremy Guthrie ever really what you would describe as a good pitcher?
Jeremy Guthrie, Remus, you can get in on this. Jeremy Guthrie is the kind of player that I feel like you drafted for the past 5 years.
I don't think
that Drew a draft.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure Jeremy Guthrie is the kind of guy you pick up off the fantasy waiver wire as opposed to drafting him.
That's why you would have drafted him.
Fair enough. Thank you. that was very insulting. That was well done.
So when the Kansas City Royals win the World Series in about 2 hours from now, is Huss going to run around the bases with them?
I assume so. I mean, I just naturally assume that they've already met Hustler, and, you know, he's invited to the post-game party and everything else. That's just sort of the, you know, what I figure would happen.
Well, here comes, I assume, Bumgarner.
Yeah, are they going to the bullpen already to take Tim Hudson out?
It appears so.
Oh, there you go. Then it's
Steve Aoki plays for the Royals.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, let's talk about the Boston Bruins and some of their injury troubles. They lost Torrey Krug again today. They're now, I mean, Zdeno Chara out of the lineup, mm-hmm. 4 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Torrey Krug now out of the lineup 2 to 3 weeks with a broken finger. They traded Johnny Boychuk right before the start of the season. Kevin Miller, their other defenseman, mm-hmm. out of the lineup. You know, when are you guys getting the call to play defense for the Bruins at this point in time?
Well, it's really troublesome, Drew, because the guys you have playing, nobody's the number one defenseman on that squad, and the younger guys are going to be entrusted by Coach Julien to play in positions that they're not comfortable with. Now, Boston, we talked to Frank Cervalli of the Philadelphia Daily News earlier in the show, and he talked about kind of the Flyers defense. Well, the biggest difference between Craig Berube, I'm going to go to the Flyers for a second, Craig Berube and Peter Laviolette, is Berube took the reins back. He said, you're not going to forecheck as hard. You're going to keep guys high in the neutral zone and high in the offensive zone, and you're going to support the defense because we know the defense isn't fast enough or good enough to defend one-on-one, you know, or the odd man rushes. Boston plays a very structured style, so you'd think that Boston would be able to handle these injuries maybe better than most. Their forwards are very good defensively. They're very aware. They have a good combination of speed, size, smarts, and all those things. But if they're better able to handle this than other teams, that doesn't come without a cost, and that cost will likely be offense. So I think the burden of this really falls onto their goaltending as to how they're able to withstand this, you know, this 4 week bridge. It's not just Chara. Chara isn't as good as he once was. Still, obviously, very important. I'm still very talented, but he's not as impactful as he once was. So this is going to be an interesting experiment for the Boston Bruins, who haven't really been able to fill. You know, I know Peter Chiarelli said this weekend, I think internally we're okay. We don't need to fill that Jerome McGinley hole. But that Jerome McGinley hole filled the Nathan Horton hole. And that Nathan Horton hole filled the spot they didn't have before. That was years ago now. But so this team is up against the cap with issues. And obviously trading Boychuk was not their first preference. I mean, Johnny Boychuk, an underrated player. Really fit in well to this system. Big, strong, better skater than people give him credit for. Big shot. Loved by his teammates. So Peter Chiarelli is going to have an interesting time here in terms of decisions as to when to make a move. Because he's going to have to make a move. The question is, do you make it now? because then you're going to move a lot of money, or do you wait till later when you have more cap flexibility?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right again, Richie. And if you look at this team, even though they've got tons of depth, you've got Seth Griffith playing on the top line there. As you mentioned, that was where Jerome Iginla was with David Krejci and Milan Lucic. But I think you're starting to see cracks in the Boston Bruins armor.
You are,
I mean, they can withstand the Torrey Krug injury more so than they can withstand the Zdeno Chara injury, and he's out a little bit more. Torrey Krug will be out about 2 weeks, 3 weeks with a broken finger. But you throw Johnny Boychuk's loss in, and now you've got Joe Morrow coming up, who has no NHL experience. He was a Pittsburgh Penguins draft pick that was acquired. The Boston Bruins acquired him. So now they're relying on him.
He was the Sagan trade.
Matt Bartkowski is elevated, and you're asking more out of Dougie Hamilton. You know, these are guys that have 2-3 years of NHL experience each. So I mean, there's some issues here for this Boston Bruins team. Do I think this is this going to cost them a playoff spot? No, but I mean, Boston Bruins haven't got off to a good start. 5 wins in 11 games. So I mean, this is something that, as Richie mentioned, maybe they might have to make a move here coming up in November.
Louis Erickson's lack of performance since they acquired him, I know, concussions aside, even when he's been playing, has been really hurt them. And the other thing you have to take into account is the East is that bad that they can maybe tread water here for a little while and still be okay. If they were in the West, it's not panic button time, but it might be close.
That's it for NHL Midweek on this Wednesday evening on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Big thank you to our guests, Ken Danico and Frank Saravelli. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN 1290, and on our website. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for analysts Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. If it's Wednesday, it's NHL Midweek. Stay tuned. World Series Game 7 live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch The Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.